Tannehill will throw it, and this will end it after the shovel, or will it? Miami running around, circling, oh look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle! Touchdown! Oh, Kenyon Drake! A miracle!
Hello, welcome to the Dolphin UK podcast. Lads, it's raining outside my window. It's a bit cold. The missus had the heating on and the Dolphins won on a Sunday evening. It's officially autumn and what a start to the season. Si, how are you, mate?
Yeah, good, thanks, Andy. Really, really pleased with a week one win. It could so easily have gone the other way. And I think we perhaps thought ourselves we were going to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. But thankfully, it turned out all right in the end. So all's good.
It did. Lee, how are you, mate? I think you were a bit more optimistic even when I'd gone negative.
I'm always optimistic. Yeah, no, really good. Glad to have Dolphins football back. That's the main thing, really.
It is, isn't it, mate? It is. And just a full action-packed Sunday. And really, it's a bit weird, wasn't it? Because it was the 25 past nine for us that the kickoff and having to sit through the 6 o'clock ones and anticipation. And I must admit, I was watching, I had the baseball on one screen, had the red zone on the TV. And I was just like, come on, hurry up. And finally we got there. So a good evening and quite a gritty game really against the Patriots. Obviously it came out 17-16 winners. We're going to dive into that a bit more in detail to start with. Then we're going to look forward to the Bills at the weekend. Si, I'll come your way first, mate. Kind of first reactions to the result on Sunday.
As I said already, pleasing that we managed to come out of Foxborough with a win, because at some point it looked as though the Patriots were going to come back and pull away in the end. So really pleased that bend but do not break defence and turned up trumps yet again with that turnover to effectively finish off the game. So really, as I said, really pleased with how it ended. Plenty to talk about in terms of the detail, I think, because there were plenty of good things, but plenty of not so good things as well. So lots. It's only one game, of course, and a long way to go and lots of time to refine plays and players to get into a bit of form. So lots to do, lots of work to do.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's definitely a positive, isn't it? Coming out, even though we probably weren't at our best, it was a bit of a scrappy win against the rookie quarterback, and we're sat top of the division, top of the division. So yeah, that is a good thing to be saying. Lee, mate, first kind of thoughts, were you impressed? Were you just like, glad it's done?
I was impressed. I was impressed. This felt like the kind of performance that we have been on the other end of for so many years, where you're close and you feel like you've got a chance only for Ryan Tannehill to throw a pick late in the game. This is the kind of game that no one cares about come the end of the season. It's worth one win, the same as all the others. And if this was a perceived good team, they'd say that's what good teams do. They find a way to win these games.
Yeah,
I was over the moon. A lot of things to be pleased with, to be honest.
I thought it was a massive win, massively important win in the whole scheme of things, because not only is it a divisional win, it's also a win in the same week the Bills lost, of course, and we'll get into that later on. But what an opportunity next weekend if they can do manage to beat the Bills to go two games ahead, or effectively three games ahead, given the tiebreaker already on the Bills. And they're going to be playing catch-up. And in what looks, on the face of it, the Dolphins' hardest part of the schedule in the first few weeks. So I think it was a massive win.
Yeah, all right. We'll dive into some. Go on, Lee. Do you want to come in there before we dive?
I just, going to say, how many times have we won in Foxborough over the last however many years? You know,
Si's going to tell us twice, isn't it?
Twice since 2009. No, they won three times since 2009, I think. No, team second victory since 2009.
And the last one was in 2019.
Well, the last time they won was 2019 with Fitzpatrick at the end to Gusecki. Yeah. Gusecki, wasn't it?
And I think the only time before that was probably the Wildcat game all those years ago. So, you know, it shouldn't be underestimated how hard it is, regardless of whether it's Tom Brady or a rookie. I've got some interesting thoughts on why this matchup actually suited Mac Jones.
Go on then. That can lead you into our first takeaway from the game, mate. That was a nice segue. Go on.
I'm guessing other people were probably as frustrated during the game as I was with the third down completions from the Patriots. But the Patriots couldn't have had a better opponent for their rookie QB to go against week one than a team that runs the same defense that they do. This is the same defense he's been seeing since he started training camp. You know, and I thought actually you saw a lot of kind of a little bit more vanilla stuff, far less players walking around at the line of scrimmage. They did it a couple of times, but not really to the extent we've seen in the past, especially with rookie quarterbacks. And I think part of that is Brian Flores would rather play this game somewhat vanilla than have Bill Belichick expose every way to beat this defense so everyone else can do it all year. And I think it works kind of both ways. I think this is why over the last couple of years we've seen these games, they kind of just want to get them over with, because I think they're the perfect people to show everyone else how to win. And I think you'd rather possibly give up this one game than show everybody else how to beat you. I think that really affects the way the game is called. But yeah, I think for the third down stuff, yeah, I just think it was perfect for Mac Jones. You know, these are the coverages he's seen. You know, this would have felt very familiar to him. And I think it's also the same reason you didn't see too much Gusecki. You know, that their offense is predicated on the two high-priced tight ends they paid for. That's what they've been playing against all the training camp. So I think this is one of those games where you cancel each other out and you end up with 17-16.
Yeah, and it was all came down to turnovers really, didn't it, in the end? So yeah, I definitely think it's a great point to be fair to start with. I think I was going to come out and say later, I didn't see a whole lot from the defense that was like, you know, that when we played the Chargers last year and it was like people walking to the line, walking away, moving side to side. And we didn't see any of that really. And it was quite weird because we'd all told each other, oh my God, this is going to be incredible the way he takes Mac Jones out of the game. But yeah, that's a really good point. And won't be surprised to see it again next week or in the next few weeks at all.
Yeah, I think it'll come back. I think we'll see it a lot more. I mean, even saw it against some like more experienced players like Jared Goff, you know, they intentionally tried to confuse him. But I think this is a case of don't let the other team expose any potential weaknesses, because I'm sure there's a way to beat this defense. I'm sure there's a way to beat that defense if you know how it's designed. But it is different than being on the other side of the field. So, yeah, I could be completely wrong, but I think we'll see some more as we cover the next few weeks.
Yeah, you're never wrong, Lee. You're never wrong.
we've probably built that up a bit too much. I think at one point it's going to be drastically wrong and it's going to be... Yeah.
It's going to be horrible. It's going to be really bad. Probably in a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I might get one right one week. My first takeaway is actually the way we came out the blocks in the first half and the second half. Obviously scored on our first drive in both occasions, and that proved vital. I wanted to pose the question to you guys. Do you think that that's last year we came and we said second half, we were a better second half team, we did come out the blocks quickly. Do you think that's something, A, do you think that's something the team's worked on? B, I mean, is the takeaway here that they've kind of game planned it very precisely? Or do you think it's more that they've just kind of, you know, had chance to talk through players a bit more and they go out and do it? And why didn't we kind of replicate that during the rest of the half? So I don't know if you've got any thoughts on that, or Lee, if you want to come in either way.
I mean, interestingly, it was their first touchdown on a game opening drive since they beat the 49ers back in October 2020, which is a strange stat, because you look at the games, particularly those at Hard Rock, and they do tend to start quickly. Maybe there's a perceived... or a perception that they tend to start quickly more on the defensive side of the ball than they do on the offensive side of the ball. But it was a particularly good drive to start the game off. And was you know how the type of coach that Bill Belichick is. He made those adjustments really quickly, which I think is probably the reason why they weren't able to replicate that immediately. But it was a good start, and it was pleasing to see them march down the field 80 yards on 10 plays in 5 minutes, 5 seconds. Just exactly the sort of thing you'd like to see Tua do.
Yeah, it was clinical, wasn't it? I think we were all kind of like, wow, this could be quite simple after that first drive, wasn't it? But that's a good point, actually, about Belichick making the changes and shutting it down, because, yeah, like, it was just such a fluid drive, really, and the ball just kind of kept moving. There wasn't really any negative plays. Gondley, you're coming in.
You know, I was just going to say, I wonder if the perceived slow starts, because we often put a field goal up early, you know, in those early drives, even if they're not touchdowns. I wonder if a lot of that is when they win the toss, they always defer. And, you know, they do seem to win the toss an awful lot. I have to look that stat up, but I wonder if it's perceived starting slow, because if you give up a field goal on the first drive with bend, don't break, which is absolutely fine, you score 3 points, no one feels like a win. You feel like you've tied the game, which obviously is what it is. But, you know, I wonder if that plays into the mentality of them being particularly slow starters.
Well, there was last season, wasn't it, where we fell behind quite a lot and then clawed our way back into games in the second half and stuff like that. I think that's where I'm coming from, really. I mean, we started last season quite quick in the first half. So I said, the 49ers game, we went up big. And then the second half of the season, it just became a bit of a slog. And then we kind of go down 10-0 or 14-3 or whatever, and then second half we'd turn it on and wouldn't be stopped. So yeah, it's a bit of a change of approach, but I actually think Sian nailed it there with Bill making the changes, and then when we got into the locker room at half time, made some changes again and came out and scored straight away. So that's quite interesting.
I mean, let's be honest, that first drive was an exact continuation of the preseason.
Yeah.
Just fluid. Everything seemed on point.
Yeah. And we were kind of, I was given to an MVP after that first drive. It was banging, wasn't it? And then by the end of the game, there was some dodgy interception. But we'll come on to that. Si, your first takeaway of the night.
Yeah, first takeaway is something the league's already touched on very briefly, in that I was looking at the stats. As you know, I like a stat. Looking at the fact that Albert Wilson and Mike Gesicki didn't catch one pass all game between them, and they only were targeted four times between them as well, twice each, which I thought was really interesting, because those two, Wilson in particular, has been quite prominent in getting that connection with Tua in the preseason and training camp, and you'd have thought they'd have looked to have continued that into the regular season. But Bill Belichick, his philosophy is to always take away one player, or the best player, isn't it, in terms of how he schemes against the defense. And I just wondered if he looked at Albert Wilson and thought, actually, he's been a big threat to date. Maybe he's the player we try and neutralize him. And I haven't looked in depth at that, so I'm only speculating, of course. But I did find it interesting that Gesicki and Wilson didn't have one single catch between them. And in fact, nobody had more than five, which was Gaskin. So even the receivers weren't particularly productive in terms of the number of catches they had. I just thought that was a really interesting observation for those two guys.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting how every time they put Parker on a slant route, it became like 15 yards. And that was the way. I don't think Parker got any yardage that wasn't on a slant route. So I just wondered why we didn't, like, run double slants and stuff like that, just to kind of liven it up a bit, because there was times where it was a bit excruciating moving the ball. And I know you can, once you've seen it a few times, you can plan for it. But the way that Parker was getting separation against that defensive back on that slant route, I was just expecting Wilson to get a bit more of that. Like you say, that would be good. Obviously, Wilson got targeted on that deep ball, didn't he, where I think JC Jackson knocked it down. It's a good play, but so that would have been a touchdown if he'd come down with it. But Gesicki, like you say, was a massive surprise for me. And Lee's obviously mentioned that they've been working against tight ends and stuff like that. But the targets weren't really there either. And I know that you don't force it into coverage and stuff like that, but I would have expected a player of Gesicki's calibre to get himself open a bit more often for Tua. Go on, Lee.
Yeah, just going back. I think it was Jalen Mills on the coverage of Albert Wilson. But I just wanted to touch on that. That was a that was a tremendous throw. It was perfectly placed, and it was just great defense. Like, sometimes that's going to happen. That's not a knock on Tua, and it's not a knock on the receiver. Everything was run right. I mean, he was open. Like, the ball was well thrown, and the defender made a play. If that had been one of our defensive backs, we would have been absolutely raving about it. So, you know, that's going to happen.
Just following up what I shared earlier, Gesicki only played in 21 snaps out of 54, which is 39%. Albert Wilson only played 22 snaps. So those are relatively low numbers when you're considering their prominent weapons for Tua. Durham Smythe, on the other hand, played 70% of snaps, played 38 out of 54. So intriguing there. I wonder why Durham Smythe tended to play more.
I think this is all about long term. I really think it is. It's funny, isn't it? How like you were saying earlier, Andy, you go on the first drive and you score and you go up. After halftime, they scored again and went up. They were playing like a team who was playing in front. I don't think they. Going back to what I said earlier, really, I don't think they exposed any more than they had to, because I just think it's a terrible team to do it against. I also think, again, they're set up to... These two teams match up kind of really similar because they run... Brian Flores is just a complete disciple of Bill Belichick. You can see so many similarities in the way the team's set up, the way the teams run, the way he coaches. Like, there's differences for sure. But, like, at its core... There's so many similarities that you're going to get a lot of stalemates across the board. And I wonder, you know, again, do you want to showcase Gesicki when that's exactly what they're planning for? You know, they know Gesicki's probably the best receiver on this team. Like, they know he's one of the Tua's favorite targets and they've got great chemistry. Darius Smythe does a good job. Like, I would imagine we would have seen a lot of Shaheen as well had he been available.
Yeah, you say that, Lee. Again, looking at the stats, Hunter Long played 18 snaps and Keithan Carter played 13. So four tight ends having significant playing time.
And so Keithan Carter and Hunter Long were only just below the snaps Gesicki got.
Yeah.
It wasn't as if Gesicki was in the game and not getting the ball. He wasn't even in the game. So I don't know. I don't think that's an accident. I don't think they're looking at the gameplay going, oh no, we forgot to get Mike in the game. Like, I think it's all very intentional. I think had we been down in the game, you probably see something a little bit different than what you see. Maybe you see, like you say, more of a slant. But I think there's probably an appreciation by Brian Flores, the same way that he's very much one game at a time, that one win is one win. It really doesn't matter if you win by 1, 3, or 30 points. We won as many games this week as the Rams did, or as the Saints did, or any of those other teams that won, you know? It all counts as one in the win column.
Shout out Jameis Winston.
Future Dolphins quarterback.
Exactly. Hear. I was going to say, 6 leagues I had Mike Gesicki in and 0 points. I had like the worst fantasy weekend because I was stacked with Gesicki, Derrick Henry, and like any of your Green Bay wide receivers. So that was an awful fantasy weekend for me.
But the Dolphins are going to be an absolute killer for so many fantasy teams because, like, you could easily not see Parker play much this week where they replace his touches with Fuller, and then Gesicki's getting featured as well. You know, it's going to be all over the map. I think that's the way they want it. That's the way we want it, because we want to win games. But from a fantasy point of view, man, horrible. It's going to be frustrating.
Horrible. And I'm sorry.
It is because for some further stats to back that up, actually, is that just totaling up the total number of snap counts for tight ends must mean logically they ran a lot of 12 personnel with one running back, two tight ends, which is exactly the opposite from what you think they're going to be playing for most of the season anyway, with potentially... four wideouts, even when Fuller comes back. So maybe Fuller played a part in that in his absence, of course. But just, yeah, that's another interesting way of looking at the snap count for tight ends.
Yeah, interesting. That is definitely. One further offensive note, and that was obviously we can't go without mentioning Jalen Waddle. Had a good debut game. Thought he kind of looked really electric. I mean, he should have come down with another catch, and that would have taken him up past, probably up past Parker's 81 yards. But obviously, did well for the touchdown, got to the outside really well, and held onto the ball. So, Si, your thoughts on Waddle in his first appearance?
I think it was important he got a touchdown because Jamar Chase got one, Devonta Smith got one earlier in the day. So I think not that there's a direct comparison there, and we shouldn't be making that comparison, but it happened last year with Tua against Herbert and Burrow. And if Waddle hadn't have got that touchdown, it would have inevitably have found its way into the national media somewhere in that he didn't produce and the other two did. So I'm pleased from that perspective he got his score, and it was a good catch and a good good dive for the end zone as well. So really pleased for him that he managed to do that.
All round, good start by him. Interesting on the kick returns as well. I don't think he took a kick return, did he? It was who was taking it? It was Grant. Yeah. So good to see Grant still getting involved. Defensively, has anyone got anything they want to talk about defensively at all? Si?
No, I've got another offensive one if you don't mind, Andy. I haven't got any defensive ones, but the looking at 10 longest plays for the Dolphins throughout that game. Eight of those 10 plays, and we're talking run or a pass from longest plays from scrimmage. Eight of those were when Tua was in the shotgun. So I know that prompted me to, I thought that was a really interesting thing that most of their production in this game came when Tua was in the gun. And that prompted me to look at all of their 54 plays in a bit more detail. And 33 of those were when Tua was in the shotgun. I mean, you take out the play, the wildcat plays, there were a couple of those. Jacoby Brissett was in for a play or two. So you take out those and the percentage of plays in the shotgun was relatively high. And I think that is maybe a sign of things to come because I think it suits Tua's RPO game. I don't think we saw that a lot last season. So that's certainly something that appears to have changed. And Gaskin even... The two longest runs of the game from him were both for 15 yards, and even they came when Tua was in the shotgun as well. So it seems as though they did have a bit of success when Tua was in the shotgun. And again, it could have been by design against that defense. But I wonder if, or don't know what you guys think, is that the sign of how things are likely to be running this offense going forwards?
Yeah, definitely. More of a college offense still, isn't it, really, the shotgun sort of stuff. But that's beneficial all round. Like you say, the RPO game was good. That's, again, where Parker got his yards and stuff like that. So that was great. And you kind of, I mean, we're just so set up for that, aren't we? I mean, once we've got Waddle, Fuller, Wilson, like if you put any of those guys running a slant route, you're just going to get extra yardage. It's almost like a guaranteed first down if Tua makes the right read. So, more of that. I'm absolutely fine. Some people will be critical and say that to be an NFL quarterback, you need to be under center and whatnot. But you know, it doesn't really matter, does it? If you're getting the yards and getting the ball in the end zone, then that's what matters. So
I'll correct myself, actually. It was 9 out of the top 10 plays were in the shotgun, and even the one that didn't, Parker caught it for 15 yards on one of those slants that you talked about earlier.
Yeah, grand. Yeah. So, yeah, I think we'll see more of the same all season, to be honest. And especially when we are behind and need to come back in games, I think it's going to be almost exclusively in the shotgun and just kind of running high tempo. So, yeah, Lee, disagree? Or?
I completely agree. And I as for running a bit more of a college-themed offense...
That's what we need.
Why wouldn't we play to the quarterback's strengths? You drafted him based on his college tape, not based on what you project him to be as an NFL star. That I think that's part of the reason you see so many high prospects struggle. Because you bring them in the NFL and then you try and get them to do something that they didn't do before. So really, you're just guessing at that point. You're just saying, you were good at this. I'm hoping you'll be good at this. You know, let's try and, if you can feather the two together somehow, you know, you can develop into more of an NFL quarterback. But if you can make the college scheme work more to start with, then... I mean, to me, it just makes sense.
Well, the Eagles did that really well at the weekend as well. Like, I was expecting nothing of that Eagles team, and they got Hurts playing like he did in college. They got Kenny Gainwell playing like he did in college. You know, that kind of third down scat back, I thought it was really impressive from the Eagles. So yeah, like we just need to embrace it and do whatever's working, don't we, really? But yeah, the defensive thing I wanted to talk about is obviously the turnovers. X wasn't getting targeted all game, but still got in there when it mattered and made that all-important play, and that's what we paid him for, really, isn't it? So, fantastic stuff. The other turnover was a bit dodgy, wasn't it? I'm not really sure he wasn't down by the time he fumbled, but anyway, that's something to not dwell on that. But Si, your thoughts on X and Byron Jones and the way those guys played in the secondary?
Well, they picked up where they left off last season. But interestingly, in the secondary, Noah Igbinoghene was inactive, of course, which maybe is a surprise there, maybe not. But maybe that speaks volumes for what they think of him at the moment. And I remember Brian Flores said in a recent presser not to read too much into the depth chart. And of course, we shouldn't be doing that anyway. But Justin Coleman only had two snaps all game and he was listed as a starting corner. Nick Needham, in fact, got 35 of the 75 defensive snaps in that particular role. So I thought that was interestingly. Similarly, Jalen Phillips only had 22 snaps as well on his debut, which isn't a huge amount. But again, perhaps goes back to what Lee said earlier about not revealing too much too soon in terms of how to beat that defence. So the snap counts were something that did catch my eye. It seems a bit of a theme for today's analysis anyway, but I just thought it was interesting to see how they rotated on the field. Even Javon Holland only played 24 snaps, but he seemed to make a bit of an impact in those playing times, didn't he? Yeah.
What a tackle. That Johnny Smith, he flipped over, didn't he? It's great.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say that they seem to bring Phillips in a lot on third down. So I wonder if they just view him as like exclusively a pass rusher and kind of not contributing in the other phases of the game. But yeah, Lee, you were going to come in before I rudely interrupted.
No. I agree on Phillips. I think Phillips is behind where they want him to be. And they're masking that by not making him play. I think the reason you saw Javon Holland not taking as many snaps as maybe people had anticipated based on his training camp and preseason, because you don't want to expose rookies to Bill Belichick. We know what happens when you put rookies in bad situations. You get Noah against Stephon Diggs. And that was bad coaching. And I think they would admit that if they had the chance to do it again, that's actually caused them a lot of problems. I'm not surprised Noah Igbinoghene was inactive. And I encourage people to not be surprised if this is a running theme. He is a project. He is as much of a project as Bowden and Perry and all the gadget players are. He is a project and he is a long way from being the finished product. For all the plays that he made in the preseason, they're all tackles after catches. There's not too many pass breakups. Whereas you see when you go against Needham, he's breaking a pass up. When you see that, as you said, they didn't throw at X. Xavier Howard petrified them with his presence, let alone actually turning the ball over, you know? And I think Noah is, I'm not saying he can't be good, but I am definitely in the camp now where I am worried. The preseason only confirmed fears for me. It didn't actually make me feel any better about this project is getting, you know, that he's getting better. I mean, once the receiver's caught the ball, I mean, making a tackle is kind of like the bare minimum that I'm expecting of any of the defensive backs. Like at that point, receiver's done his job. I hope it works out. I really do. But I think this is going to be something we see going forwards. Like he's going to be active if there's other injuries across the defensive backs where he'll probably still ride the bench unless he's absolutely needed. But hopefully they get on top of this and he does develop into the player they want. But at the moment, it looks like he's got a long way to go.
Yeah. Come on, Sam, are you coming in?
Yeah. I was going to say he's going to be on the roster this season, I would have thought. I can't imagine they're going to cut him now. But going into next season, if he does not have a particularly good camp this time next year, then that's when I could see his roster spot being in jeopardy, I feel.
To be honest, he probably gets 4 years. He's on a 5-year deal. He's got 4 years. Like, there's not a massive amount to be gained by cutting him unless he's clearly regressed. You know, if progress is slow, then maybe you continue to work with it. But I don't know. I say the preseason didn't help me feel better about it. And I know people seem very defensive of defensive of him saying, you know, I think it's people feel sorry for him after the Stephon Diggs incident, which I really do think was bad coaching.
Yeah.
You know, they should have stopped that way sooner in that game. You know, I understand throwing him out there. If you think he can do it, fine. But then as soon as it was apparent that he couldn't, I don't know, something else should have been tried. But, you know, coaching staff are paid to coach as well. So coach him up. Let's get him going.
That's it. I also wonder, guys, if you think that there's any chance we bring back Benedrick McKinney this week. I've seen a few tweets suggesting that might be an idea. I thought there was a couple of plays, especially the first one of the game from the Pats, where Damian Harris kind of side through that linebacking core. I wonder if we kind of look at bringing back McKinney or doing something to solidify that linebacking group. I also wonder whether the injury to Raekwon Davis is as bad as it, I don't think it's as bad as it first seemed, because he came off on his own, on his own two feet and seemed to be keen to come back in, but he obviously didn't. I don't know. Any of you guys seen an update? No update. No. So that one's worrying, because obviously Davis was going to be integral to the middle of that defensive line. But Lee, your thoughts on the run game? Are we looking to bring McKinney back here? Obviously, it's only one game, but we could get a bargain, really, then.
Yeah, I mean, they could, but I think that's almost... Is it like a triple negative if you trade for a guy, restructure him, then cut him, then re-sign him? I don't know. I don't see them doing it. I think if they thought they would have to re-sign him after 1 week, they're probably not cutting him anyway. The only upside is I think it changes the guarantees in a vet's contract. But I mean,
yeah, there's no guarantee in his contract if he gets signed this week. So I just wondered if it might be a roster space thing, really. So
yeah, no, I'm not saying that it would be a bad idea necessarily. I just don't see them doing it, because I think they were quick enough to admit we've made a mistake and cut him. I'm not sure how keen they are to bring someone back.
Yeah, I tend to agree, actually. If they thought he was worthy of a roster spot, and they'd have kept him. And he's not done anything. He himself hasn't done anything to change their minds of that, if what they did was release him on his performance. So I don't think they'll look to him. He's going to sign tomorrow now, isn't he?
Yeah, no, I don't know. You might correct me, but I don't think they said he performed poorly. I think it might have been the cap space he was taking up. So that was my thesis here, was that he was cut for a week, bring him back after when there's no guarantee in his contract, and do what you want, sort of thing. Because I was surprised that, obviously we were all surprised he was firstly cut, but then that he didn't latch on another roster somewhere. I thought he'd end up back on the Texans, to be fair. So
did he not sign briefly with the Jets?
Don't know. He may have done. So not sure. I don't know if you want to Google that, but that. Sorry, yeah. No. I think that was my only thesis here, was the thing that you kind of got a bit of roster space. If Davis needs to go temporarily on the IR or something, then bring him back. Obviously don't play in the same position, but all involved with that run stopping ability. So yeah, there's a theory for you. And as you both got your heads down Googling, I will keep rambling towards towards our player of the week, which I am going to come to you first, Si, because I know you didn't prepare for player of the week, so you've got to think on the spot and tell me who it was.
I've already touched on it, I think, anyway. Jalen Waddle deserves my game ball. I think he was, I don't know where I read this, but I think he wasn't far off breaking the receiving record for a rookie Miami Dolphin player. I think it was Parker, the current holder, potentially, on his opening game. I might be talking complete rubbish because I'm not sure where I read that, but nevertheless, he got a touchdown on his debut and he made a couple of good catches, so he's going to get my game ball this week.
Sounds good. I think I'm going to agree with you and not make it too difficult. I thought it was fairly simple, really. Obviously, could have come down with that one extra catch, but fairly good performance. And I think he got 17 yards on his first catch, so 17 for 17 to start his career was very apt. Lee, player of the week.
I wanted to give it to Xavier Howard, because if you're going to complain about your contract and get for that long, you're going to go through all of that, punch a ball out and get a game-winning turnover. Like, Granted, the offense had work to do after that. That didn't end the game. And I think they actually deserve a lot of credit for milking what, best part of 4 minutes off the clock to end the game. That's not something we've had before. I thought that was important. But I'm actually going to give a game ball to Liam Eichenberg. I know there's obviously the one block where he got trodden on and put on his butt. Not going to hold that against him. But coming in at the last minute to play a position you haven't played through training camp and do a solid job, and for most people across Twitter seem to think that he should be the starter going forward. You know, I think that's a hell of a job, especially against a Patriots defense.
Yeah, definitely agree. And I was banging the drum for it beforehand. Interestingly, Barry Jackson had it and Omar got it wrong. So
yeah.
So that's what we like. That's what we like, a bit of Barry. What was I going to say? I've just seen that Flores has said in an interview that Austin Jackson's a starting left tackle, which is disappointment because I think you should shunt him inside. So you're shaking your head. Go on.
What about if that's only the case because he's going to start a right tackle? Where they played him a lot.
Actually, that's a good idea because we've all seen the video of Jesse Davis getting absolutely swallowed alive. So,
I know Jackson struggled in the preseason. Everyone seems to be mega down on Austin Jackson, but we were also really impressed with him last season. He did a lot of good stuff. It's amazing how quickly we're willing to throw Austin Jackson away, but how much time we're willing to invest in Eric Benogne.
I think with Jackson, the problem is that
he'll get your quarterback killed.
Yeah, exactly. And for me, he just has the stature of a guard, and I think that's where he's going to end up playing. I think he's going to be good playing there. So it just feels difficult to kind of prolong it. But maybe that's just me.
I mean, I'd like to see the younger guys. Like, if you can get Jesse Davis to be the first guy off the bench, then you've got the makings of a line that could be around for a number of years. And I think that's, you know, could be crucial come 2 years' time. If you've got the starting five that we've seen in any order that they end up settling in at, I mean, we could say that, you know, this is a really quite a big moment because we've had some turnstiles there. Obviously, there was the unicorn line a few years ago, which went together. I mean, it's game changing. But, you know, I'm actually excited for it going forwards. And I thought the O-line played well. I don't think it was a disaster. On the interception, obviously, there was bad plays, but I can point to the Jesse Davis bad play on the interception, right? And then Tua slips, which doesn't help before he throws a pass. But I can also point to Jalen Waddle and say, you catch that on third down, this game could be actually quite a bit different. Like, we're driving, you know? Yeah, offensive line mistakes are always just amplified because it puts someone in the quarterback's face. I just thought, as a whole, it wasn't the disaster that people were saying it was going to be 2 weeks beforehand.
Yeah, I actually thought Solomon Kindley played really well, which is I was going to say at left guard, because that was where everyone was talking about starting Eichenberg, wasn't it? So that was my worry there. But I do wonder if I think you're right. I think they'll put Eichenberg at right tackle next week, but I hope they continue to start Kindley because I completely agree that Davis should be the one that sits down, and not just because
He did sit down.
Several times.
Yeah, quickly. But also, I thought that when we had to, we were able to run the ball. They got enough push that we were able to run the ball, and Tua often had enough time to make reads and throw the ball. Yeah. You know, the Albert Wilson pass, you know, I'm really praising the defense. I thought it was great defense. But there was time for Wilson to get open and get into the end zone. There was time for Tua to throw the ball without any hassle. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we thought we had traffic cones. So I just think there's something to work with and it's something to watch. Now, we might get exposed this week against another good defense, but until they do, going to give them some credit, I think.
Yeah, all good. Final thought of the week from me was that I'm all in favour of bringing Jacoby Brissett in on third and one, but what the hell was it afterwards when he was there in the shotgun and it was like chaos? I mean, I know that he was there to run the clock down, don't get me wrong, but I don't think he knew he was there to run the clock down. It was just a bit of a shambles. Go on.
I've got to be honest, I thought this was the ultimate, and we saw this a couple of years ago with Mike Vrabel and Bill Belichick. This was two coaches that know each other just messing with each other. And I actually thought you saw Tua look pissed off that he was standing on the sideline. I thought it's the first time I've actually seen him look that way. To be honest, after interceptions, he seems not happy that he threw an interception, but he seems fairly level-headed. I thought he looked annoyed that he was being taken out. But I also understand doing it. Jacoby Brissett's a big guy, a lot bigger than Tua. Do I want Tua take... Like, people are concerned about Tua taking extra hits. Do we want to put him in a position where we guarantee he's getting hit when you've got a guy that big standing on the sideline? I understand the premise, but it was poorly executed all around. Yeah. Like,
when he stood in the shotgun, I was just thinking, you're probably right, they were just messing with each other, but I don't think Jacoby Brissett knew that. I think he was trying to snap the ball and everyone else was there like, who the fuck are you, sort of thing. So, so that was fun. Right, on to next week. Buffalo Bills, who lost at the weekend, which was very pleasant and unexpected. And I still don't really know how the Steelers did it, because they looked pretty bad as well. But Mike Tomlin is just a good coach. Let's just get that out there to start with. But the Bills, 16-23, they lost. Josh Allen threw 51 passes. Obviously, didn't complete all of them. 270 yards and a touchdown. Stephon Diggs, 70 yards, Cole Beasley 60 yards, Emmanuel Sanders 50 yards, Gabriel Davis got the touchdown. Their kind of wide receiver core is just as good as ours, isn't it? So that's one thing to watch for this week. But guys, I mean, we're in an unprecedented position. Obviously, like you said, Si, if we go 2-0 and they go 0-2, then it's a whole new ball game for us. And kind of, you know, normally we're coming from behind throughout the season and in games. So really, really good if we can do this. But Si, how do we do it? How do we beat them based on their first performance, do you think?
On defense, you've hit the nail on the head in terms of their wide receiver core. I think we've got to contain them. I don't believe they have a decent running game. I think Zach Moss was a healthy scratch. Devin Singletary had 11 carries for 72 yards, but he also fumbled twice. Obviously, we've got the running threat of the quarterback, of course, but as a group, as a positional group, I don't think they've got a decent running back core. So I think the key on the defensive side of the ball is to contain those wide receivers, because they've got plenty of good ones. So I think you'll see more of the Dolphins play, perhaps those who didn't play as many snaps in the secondary may naturally see more, I think, just due to the flow of the game and how that's likely to materialise. So from my perspective, containing those wide receiver core is going to be the key to the game on the defensive side of the ball.
Sounds good, man. Yeah, I think Cole Beasley's kind of the key, isn't he? Because we get Stephon Diggs is very good, but we've also got two very good corners to kind of match up with him. It's who we match up on Beasley over the middle that's going to be key to stopping it, I think. And obviously, Eric Rowe can kind of come in there, but he's not like a quick guy, Eric Rowe, is he? Matches up with the bigger tight ends. Go on, Lee.
No, he seems like a guy that Needham needs to be. This seems like a job for Nick Needham.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think they killed us a little bit last year with tight end play. And I think, you know, if you can keep Eric Rowe doing tight end duties and you can kind of get, you know, Nick Needham's been playing exceptional football for such a long time now. Like, you know.
Interestingly, the Bills didn't use their tight ends much against the Steelers. I think they only targeted them four times out of Allen's 51 pass attempts. So, and they weren't a factor against the Steelers whatsoever.
Yeah. And their tight end room is not standout, is it? I mean, Dawson Knox, okay. But, you know, beyond that, it's a bit low-key. Sorry, Lee, I interrupted.
No. I was just going to say, I thought we actually saw, like, I haven't seen the game in its entirety. I've seen most of it. But I actually thought you saw some year one Josh Allen with regards to being inaccurate, and people will say, oh, he's just had a bad game. He has, but you can also force him into it because it's in his history. That wasn't the outlier. He's done this before. So, you know, yeah, don't let him get off to a fast start and let him keep that seed of doubt in the head. I also thought I don't know if it was reported as an injury. I thought Stefon Diggs looked gimpy at the end of the game. I didn't think he looked sound walking around the field, but I was kind of too screening the end of the game and not necessarily giving it my full attention. But without trying to blow things out of proportion, I don't know if there is a bigger week two game that you could possibly have than this because of the way things are played out. If you can put the Bills in a 2-0 hole, I mean, it would be really quite something. And obviously get two division wins yourself. But anytime you can put yourself two games ahead of the Bills, I think would be really something. But they do need to... They need to show something after that game last year. We're going to hear a lot in the next week about how they performed in that last week of the season. Was it the last week of the season? The week before?
Yeah. Last week, yeah.
Yeah, you know, which wasn't a true reflection of the Dolphins team from last year. You know, they played a much closer in Miami much earlier in the season. I think a key to this is going fast and using the heat and using the fact that most players didn't play a lot in the preseason. And I say offense for us is to probably keep that tempo and keep Tua in rhythm and really kind of use that as the extra advantage.
Yeah, and I wonder who will kind of, if we'll try and deliberately match up Trey White against anyone and kind of almost sacrifice them for the game. Obviously, Trey White's a like, very, very good player. I wonder if that's probably Parker's job to kind of match up. And yeah,
this is why you signed Will Fuller. Because, go on then, match Trey White up with either one you want. Because yeah. I think they will happily use the other. Providing Will Fuller's healthy. You know, but if you want to cover Devontae Parker with him, we'll go after some of the other guys. But if you want to cover Will Fuller, we'll go after Devontae. This is what the whole premise of the team build is.
Yeah, it's actually quite exciting to see the kind of matchups this weekend because there's really good matchups all over the park. When we're on offense, you've got Teron Johnson's probably one of the better slot corners in the league, and he's going to go up against Waddle or whoever's in there. Then Levi Wallace is actually like criminally underrated as a second corner, obviously not in the same respect as you'd put X or Byron to each other like that. But Levi Wallace against Fuller could be a really, really good matchup as well. So looking forward to watching it really. And then I think the run game is going to be really crucial this week as well. Like, I think there's going to be so much attention on the kind of passing game and dropping deep to kind of play our receivers that we need Gaskin to find those holes and get through and pick up some good yardage. So, yeah, go on, Simon.
I think it'll be the other way, actually. I don't think the Dolphins are going to have much success running the ball at all. I think the key to the game to them winning the game on offense is... for Tua to have a big game, because the Bills did a really good, effective job of shutting down the Steelers' running game with our old favourite Najee Harris. He only got 16 carries for 45 yards, and the Steelers also have a bit of a suspect offensive line as well, and they did a really good job of shutting down that Steelers' running game. So they could conceivably do the same thing again to the Dolphins. But who have arguably got a lesser talented running back in Gaskin compared to Harris. So I think the key from an offensive side of the board is for Tua to have a big game.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my point would be that they're probably going to ask us to back Gaskin. You see what I mean? They're going to try and take the passing game away. They're going to go, right, then run the ball against us. That's the only thing for me. I think that's why I just want to see Gaskin hitting the holes and kind of, you know, going in hard. I think he did a good job at the weekend. And although Savon Ahmed didn't really do a lot in terms of the stat sheet, when he was in the game, I thought he was really good. I thought he was really effective. And then hopefully I'll be kind of bringing him in to get him as a change of pace guy at the weekend, yeah.
Yeah, I think you might see Ahmed featured a little bit more, especially with his ability. I think he's a great... I think they both catch well out in the backfield, but I think he does do it better than Gaskin. Sorry, Simon. I jumped in front of you.
No, that's all right. I was just going to pick up on something you mentioned earlier, Lee, actually, about how we may have seen a little bit of year one Josh Allen in that game. And I think that might have been partly down to their front five. I mean, they had a bit of a rough day against the Steelers. I think Josh Allen got hit 8 times in addition to the 3 sacks he took, and he fumbled twice as well. So if the Dolphins can replicate what the Steelers did, then that would be an ideal scenario in terms of putting the pressure on Josh Allen, because then the wide receivers aren't going to be as much of a factor as they would be if they don't get that pressure on him, if you see what I mean. So I think the fact that you already mentioned, we saw a little bit of Josh Allen, or year one Josh Allen, I think we could conceivably see the same again.
Emmanuel Ogbazan, Emmanuel Ogbazan all day. He was great at the weekend as well, by the way. Sorry, Lee, go on.
No, I was just going to say, no matter what any commentator tells you, and we will hear it a bunch, Josh Allen is big and Josh Allen is strong and all this stuff, no quarterback likes getting hit. Doesn't matter who they are. They hate it. They're also not used to it, because they don't get hit in training camp. They don't really, most of them didn't play in the preseason. So, you know, you can ruffle the best of them. You know, let's be honest. Our most effective games are games when against Tom Brady, were games where Cam Wake would have a big game. You know, you're able to take him out of his rhythm and get him nervous. Not nervous, I suppose. Antsy is probably a better way of putting it, you know. And I think you saw a little bit of that on the other night. You know, even the great Tom Brady against the Cowboys, the couple of times he got pressure, you could see that, you know, doesn't want to be hit. Don't blame him. I wouldn't want to be hit either. It's not criticism, but you know, I'd say we will hear a ton this week. Josh Allen's big and Josh Allen's strong. Yeah, well, it's not if he's getting hit by Emmanuel, but do you know what I mean? It hurts just as much.
We haven't talked about it too much, but that pick that Tua threw, I don't know about you guys, but when he got hit on that throw, my heart was in my mouth because it did look a hell of a whack. Fortunately, he got up all right. But yeah, I was a little bit concerned for a moment because it did seem a big hit.
However, that wasn't roughing the passer when Landon Roberts tickled Matt Jones' knee, and that was have a day off. That was an awful call, by the way. I saw someone on Twitter trying to explain that he went low, but when you watch it, he actually does take him above the knee. So that was just a terrible call.
I know we've moved on from the Patriots game, but like, let's also give a game ball to the officials for being absolute idiots. Like that was a horribly called game. Yeah. I mean, There was a point there where the referees were discussing something, and I was saying to my brother, like, they're definitely trying to work out how they can make this a penalty against the Dolphins. Like, it's a hold against the Patriots. You know what they're trying. Like, man, you don't want to sound like that conspiracy theorist, but it always happens, and always in New England.
Yeah, I was going to say, New England at home with Bill Belichick as head coach is exactly the equivalent of Man United at home at Old Trafford with Alex Ferguson being manager, and they used to get all the calls as well.
Yeah,
and I think you've seen a lot over the last few days about people pointing out how rarely pick plays get called by New England. A pick play is a pick play. Like you can't be smart about running it. If you run a pick, it's a pick. Like the concept's fairly straightforward, but. You know, yeah, the officiating was horrible. The one thing I would say is, and I'm not saying that the call was right. The call was obviously wrong because he tackled him above the knees. But the argument that if somebody is falling towards a quarterback's lower legs, and you're like, well, what is he supposed to do? Just roll to the side? Well, yeah, that's what they want. They don't care if an argument isn't he needs to make a sack. Their argument is it's about safety. So it's got nothing to do with, well, he couldn't do anything else because there's no other way to tackle him. As far as they're concerned, don't tackle him then. Like I say, that's not an argument. But 100%, you know, I'm not... That was a terrible call and it was terrible officiating, and it was a great sack.
If anyone wants to see it, go on, sorry.
Again, that was game-changing. Like, you know, that's what kept the Patriots had a lot of calls here that kept them in it. And also, you know, the Jalen Waddle drop. It's not all ifs and buts, but you know, this game was close for some miscues on behalf of the referees, not straight up the Dolphins were this close. The Dolphins could have won by a little bit more.
Yeah, that's a fair comment. Yeah, I was going to say, if you want the best call of the weekend, it was on Saturday night, and the Stanford kicker on the first play of the game, that the returner got through to him, and he absolutely walloped the the return man and the Stanford kicker got ejected for targeting. So that was like absolutely excellent. So that is well worth a watch. But right, that brings us to the end. So we'll do our quick score predictions. I think I got the Dolphins score. I obviously didn't get the Patriots score, but I think I said 17. So I'm going to take take a point from week one. There we go, a rare win. Lee, far away, what's your score prediction against the Bills?
Oh, no, I have no idea. I haven't even given it any thought. I'll have 28-24.
Two.
I don't know. Oh, to Dolphins. I'm just predicting Dolphins. Like last year, I predicted Dolphins wins all the way through. That's not going to change, no matter what my season prediction was.
I'm sorry.
I predicted in my overall season prediction, I've got the Dolphins down as a loss in this game, and I'm going to stick with that, I think, because if the Bills lose, and the Chiefs' second game, they're playing an injury-hit Ravens on Sunday Night Football, I think. So you would assume that they're going to win that game at home and go 2-0. If the Bills lose again, they go 0-2. And I think that would be home field advantage out the window for the Bills already, because I can't see the Chiefs losing more than a couple of games. And I just can't see the Bills falling that behind so early. So I'm going to go for a Bills win and 27-17.
Nice. There we go. I'm going to split the difference. Going to be positive.
I thought you were going to take a tie.
No.
Unbelievable.
No. That would be a great game. I'm going to go... Dolphins are going to... I don't think it's going to be that high scoring, actually. I think we're going to see a bit of another like slog fest. So I'm going to go 24-21 to the Finns. So
if you're always wrong, I'm not sure I like this. But oh, I would say this is almost, as much as I said it was a big game for the Dolphins, this is almost must win for the Bills, because yeah, like you say, this puts them in such a horrible position. Just goes to show you how important winning that week one game is, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Right, we'll leave it there. Final podcast shout out of the week is to Sam Darnold, who was MVP level against the Jets. Adam Gase effect is fully in flow again. So that's fine. Darnold can go and do whatever he wants now with the Panthers. Port Zach Wilson looked fairly decent the second half of that game, so looking forward to that one. Lee, you're going to wrap us up.
Sorry. I got one more thing that we've got to say in the podcast, that anyone who doubts Tua, Bill Belichick hasn't beaten him.
Yeah, okay. I was confused by what you said, but yeah, that is correct. Yeah,
so he's undefeated against the Patriots. Can he be luck for so long? You know, the fact that he's got a winning record and all these things.
Long may it continue. And that is a bombshell to end it on. Unbeaten against Bill Belichick. Tua's going to beat the Bills next week. There we go. Thanks for listening, guys. See you soon.